have been taken, but this reflects the organization that the group talked about and thought made sense. The first thing I'd like to mention is that for anybody who is planning to come to Istanbul for the face-to-face meeting, or for those of you who are not but are able to participate remotely, we are trying to set up a face-to-face meeting on Sunday afternoon before the welcome reception in an effort to make as much use of the time that we have together as possible, and also reflecting the fact that we were a little slower getting off the starting block. The next thing is that we have talked about work streams or work tasks, work items that sort of can organize our work. And on Friday, we came up with five, one being the sort of compact with community mission and core values statement that we had discussed briefly in Singapore as a straw man. Two would be refinements, improvements, enhancements to the ombudsman function. Three would be refinements, enhancements, changes to the reconsideration request process. Four would be the independent review process. And we had a category of others, which we will come to, other new mechanisms. Over the weekend, Jordan Carter and I were able to spend some time. If somebody's rustling papers in the background, if you could put us on mute, that would be great. Jordan and I compared notes on our various task lists, and we decided that there were a couple of things in Work Party 1 that should come over to our group, and that the new mechanisms should probably go to Work Party 1. I'll show you the new mechanisms issues that have been moved formally over to Work Party 1. But the first item here is the what I'm calling, and really it's for lack of any other description and not final in any sense, is the sort of compact with the community encompassing ICANN's, well, actually, let's go first up to the first part, the principles for our work. We discussed what our principles should be as we move forward. And there was pretty strong agreement in the first call on Friday that our goal should be to work on mechanisms that ensure that ICANN actions are related to issues that are within its stated mission and that require ICANN to act consistent with clearly articulated principles. This would be ensuring that the ICANN board and ICANN can be held to its bylaws, ensuring that ICANN carries out its mission consistent with a binding statement of values and principles, and preventing scope or mission creep through bylaws, changes, policies, et cetera. And just as an exercise in getting everybody on the same page and hopefully testing this notion about this is what we're about, I'd like to begin with any discussion that people have about these principles for our work, what it is we're trying to accomplish, and what our guiding principles will be as we move forward. Anybody who has comments or anything like that, please raise your hand. I see Caboose's hand is raised. Please join us.
Yes, good time, morning, afternoon, so on. If I am asked by somebody just close to me, the first item, contacted community, asking me, what do we mean by community? Who are the community? Are we talking of 13 ICANN community that we have counted in ICG when we discuss? What are the communities that we have to contact? Or who are those community that we need to contact? If it is defined, I have no problem. If it is not defined, refer me somewhere that I could read. Where are these communities? Thank you.
That's a very good point. We're first going to just talk about the principles for our work, which is the page ahead of that. But I do think that that's a very good point, Cavus, and we should discuss it.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Anybody have any comments, questions, or concerns about the principles for our work? Obviously, it's not written in stone, but I think, to the extent that we stray into other areas, we want to be able to ask ourselves whether that makes sense. And whether we need to modify our principles. Okay, I don't see any other hands on that point. So moving on to the compact with the community, I think that the issue that Cavus has raised is who is the community is going to. It is something that we're all going to need to think about and nail down collectively in the accountability process and in the IANA transition process. One way to think about it is to contemplate that those affected by ICANN's actions. In some cases, it will be those who are directly affected and those who are indirectly affected. But remember, it goes back to the mission and core values, the mission, which is, who is dependent upon the root server system and implementing consensus policies around names. That ensure the stable and secure operation. I've seen it shorthanded in, sort of SOs, ACs, and other directly affected and indirectly affected stakeholders. That's sort of pretty broad. I think any thinking that we can do to articulate that a little more crisply would be quite useful. But I don't know if we can do it at the outset. Cavus, you have a comment?
Yes. Just for your information, I think I have raised it before. When we did some work in ICG, we have identified 13 communities. Whether you call them directly or indirectly affected, it may be difficult, but at least as a starting point, we could put them into the shopping list, these 13 communities that were identified in ICG for their work. That is just a point I wanted to offer for your consideration.
Okay, that's very helpful. Why don't we go through this, but if we have time, if Alice or Brenda, if you can get the ICG list, and maybe we'll have some time to discuss it as we go through. So with respect to this compact that I'm calling it, and we can call it anything we want, it consists of a mission statement for ICANN. Again, this is something that is taken from the bylaws, but also is reflected in the specification one with respect to registry and registrar agreements and also in the bylaws. So obviously it's coordination of the global internet system of unique identifiers, and specifically with regards to names, it's implementing consensus policies that ensure the stable and secure operation of the Internet's unique name systems and that involve issues for which uniform or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate openness, interoperability, security, and or stability of the DNS. So that's the that's just the straw man for this one work work task. Then the notion would be, in addition to, you know, an articulation of the mission statement, that ICANN would be obligated to carry out its mission in certain ways. It would be obligated to limit its activities that to issues that are within ICANN's mission and require global coordination. It would have a commitment to preserve operational stability, security, reliability, interoperability, and openness. It would be obligated to open transparency in the public interest and in accordance with the multi-stakeholder model. It would be required not to get into a situation where it was advancing the interests of one or more interest groups at the expense of others. And this is just a way of talking about avoiding regulatory capture. Respecting the roles of the SOs, the ACs, and external expert bodies, and that includes groups like the IETF and the IEB and the numbers registries and the like. Respect the support the bottom-up multi-stakeholder model of policy development, and reflecting in a manner that's consistent with the compact and that reflects the functional, geographic, and cultural diversity of the Internet. Rely on market mechanisms to promote and sustain a competitive environment. In apply documented policies consistently, objectively, neutrally, and fairly. Remain accountable through mechanisms defined in the bylaws. Duly consider governmental public policy recommendations. And operate with excellence and in a fiscally responsible manner. Now, those are taken essentially from ICANN's existing core values, plus the non-discriminatory principle that appears in a different part of the ICANN bylaws, and also based on comments that that other people have made in the in a public comment. We, on Friday, asked for volunteers for this work group, and we will be asking for volunteers to work on this, and the task here would be to complete and refine the mission statements and the commitments or community compact or whatever it is we decide to call it. There was one item in the WP1 scope that related to clarifying ICANN's limited technical mission, which is not particularly a triggered item, but that fit within this work stream neatly, so we've moved it over here and eliminated it from the Work Party 1 work stream. Anybody have comments or questions about this particular work item? Kavuz?
Yes, I have. When you refer to the mission of ICANN, do you refer to the mission which is currently understood to be in bylaw or under the comments, or some of the elements of the affirmation of commitment when it is included or consolidated in the bylaw also will be added to the mission of the ICANN. Have you considered that this is when 1 point, please, and I may raise the second one. You refer ICANN technical mission. Is there any other mission than technical? Do we have a a separation, saying that this mission is technical and this mission is others, and what are the definition of others, non-technical or administrative or procedural or what? Because I referred also to some of the statement of the NTIA referred to ICANN technical mission, and even the two senators referred to ICANN technical mission. So what is the secrecy on this technical? That is, and the last point is that when we say contacting community, we have to think in future how we contact the community. Suppose that we know who are the community. How we contact? It would be a designated people by whom they contact the community and bring the issue back. So these are the small things that perhaps you should think it over, not to be forgotten. Thank you.
Right, and I think that those are all points that this work party, this task would encompass. I can tell you that when I was coming up with the commitments in this straw man, I did go back and look at the affirmation of commitments. So I think that I have incorporated in them, but obviously that would be for the group that's working on these to explore some more. Limited technical mission is traditionally the way ICANN and the white paper and others have referred to ICANN's mission. The technical mission is coordinating the Internet system of unique identifiers, and then we have a set of tools with which that it uses to accomplish that mission. We use the term technical to essentially limit ICANN's roles to that which is necessary to achieve the coordination, reasonably necessary to achieve the coordination, as opposed to a variety of public policy issues that are the remit of sovereign governments as opposed to a body like ICANN. But all of those things are questions that the group working on this particular work stream will need to talk about and grapple with. And, of course, the communication question goes hand in hand with the sort of what is the community that we're talking about. Okay, if there are no other questions, we'll go to the Office of Ombudsman, which is another task. There were many, many suggestions in the public comment period about reforming the Ombudsman function, strengthening its powers, perhaps giving it the power to set board decisions or policies aside. I think that is, whether that's appropriate or not depends a lot on a discussion about what the role of the Ombudsman is and if there are other places where that could happen. A lot of discussion about strengthening the independence of the Ombuds function, giving the Ombuds the ability to refer a matter to an independent review, providing more transparency on how the board or staff responds to the Ombudsman's intervention. In particular, find it a little frustrating that we know whether things are, open or closed or resolved, but in the annual report, but we don't really have more information about how they've been resolved, whether the board has, has accepted or acted on the Ombudsman's recommendation or intervention, or whether the board has just said, thank you, we hear you. One suggestion, and it's not clear to me that the next three things are appropriate for the Ombudsman function, but there are various review mechanisms. The two highlighted bullet points about giving the community power to select the ombudsman or allowing the NOMCOM to select and retain the ombudsman do go to perhaps strengthened independence, but those items will be in the remit of Work Party 1. So let everything about the ombudsman other than the selection process itself would be in this group. And the point of sort of what the task of the group would be, and this is going to be the same in every case, is to look at the current rules under which this review mechanism is carried out and propose appropriate changes, enhancements, whatever, that to those rules in order to create the kind of accountability that we think are missing. Mathieu and Thomas had previously circulated a kind of template for what would need to be addressed when we're talking about the implementation. We'd need to have an understanding from the group about, you know, who has standing to invoke the assistance of the ombudsman, what the standard of review would be for invoking that, and perhaps that's different depending on the situation. How the process works, how it makes decisions, how accessible it is, and how it would be implemented. And this is an important part of the sort of knowing that we won't get all of the accountability mechanisms stood up and operating by the time the transition needs to take place, but having a clear path and the adequate tools to implement it following any transition. Any comments on this work task? Yes, Caboose.
Yes, thank you. I think the ombudsman was or is an arrangement with the current situation. I wonder whether when we are talking about empowering the community to do some sort of either oversighting or monitoring or assessment, I don't know the word, which word we can use, I see some conflict between empowering the community and giving a role with such a endless power to the ombudsman, unless ombudsman would be something more or less an vector of the community, but not something which is in parallel to the community. There should be some sort of coordination, or let us say something that they do not conflict each other. So I see currently it would be difficult to have community to be empowered to do something, then we have ombudsman, then I don't know who will judge between the two, even though the ombudsman is elected or selected by the community. I see we have to look at this issue, that do really we need ombudsman if we empower community? And if you have all of these mechanisms, review and redress, or we don't need that anymore. Thank you.
Right. Well, that's clearly a question. I think that there is quite a lot of literature about the role and use of an ombudsman, and I think at some level, one of the notions is that you address issues early as possible through an ombudsman function that doesn't require, you know, necessarily a whole community vote. So I think there's some value in talking about that. I think with respect to, you know, the selection of the ombudsman, who selects the ombudsman, that's really a question of strengthening the independence of the ombudsman. But I know that Chris Todd has strong feelings about this one, and I expect there's going to be a lot of discussion. But, of course, your point is well taken. There's nothing sacred about any of these suggestions, and to the extent that as we, you know, come up with mechanisms that we think are important, we need to not simply add new mechanisms. We need to see whether the existing mechanisms continue to make sense. Okay, moving down to the reconsideration issue. This is something that the community and the board, frankly, has expressed some frustration with respect to the very narrow circumstances under which reconsideration can be invoked. And so this work, this task would, participants in this would be looking at the mechanism for reconsideration and looking at whether the standard of review could be modified, whether it covers, encompasses all of the actions and groups that it needs to have, whether there's, whether it is more appropriately kind of a first step to independent review or something fairly separate as it is now, a different basis, although in all practical purposes, it tends to be a necessary first step. So that's what this group will be doing. Then the independent review, I've set out here the current standard for independent review and the previous standard for independent review. In this area, I think that there is a lot of concern about the cost of this process, the adequacy of it, the accessibility of it, whether it should be something that only directly affected parties can implement, can invoke, or whether it's something that the community could invoke on the basis of certain, events. There's also some questions about whether the current system ensures that all necessary parties are participants in an independent review process. So looking at the independent review, in particular those issues, is going to be an important and a very big piece of work. To me, this is sort of the heart of our work. There have been a lot of suggestions about creating a permanent standing independent review panel so that you can develop expertise and ensure consistency across the decisions that the independent review panels make, and resolve some of the sort of cross-cutting policy or implementation issues that we've experienced in the new GTLDs, for example. What the scope of review would be, how we can make sure that it is accessible. There's a fairly strong view about making the independent review's decisions binding. I think that is not universally agreed on, but I certainly have heard a lot of views for that. And then one of the issues that comes up is using this as an independent appeals process for contested delegations, transfers, revocations, et cetera, related to IANA. I just want to make sure that everybody here notes that at least with some of these IANA operational issues, the directly affected parties, meaning registries and both G's and C's, and I know I can tell you from personal experience that the CCNSOs want to be designing the process, any process for review. They may be able to sort of use the independent review panel as a tool, but we shouldn't presume that this group would be writing the rules for revocation and transfers and redelegations, particularly of Cs, but also of Gs. Any questions? Cavus, you still have your hand up. Is that
anyone? Yes, Becky, I'm very sorry. With respect to the previous issue of ombudsman, I had a point, if you allow me, just raise
sure,
it
I'm sorry.
And put it on record. I believe that ombudsman would be tasked to act on a defined or predetermined activities either triggered or non-triggered by the community. That would be more or less a representative or an agent of the community to act on the regular basis on something as a non-triggered and on the triggered. So we would be connected strongly with the community when it is empowered. This is the past of the issue of the ombudsman. On the issue of discussing, may I ask that is it really necessary to have point 3 and 4 as a two different points? Because I see no major difference between reconsideration and review. Couldn't we, or would it be possible that you combine item 3 and 4 together, and you have very rightly referred to the wishes of the many people talking about standing independent review panel. And I remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a lot of good exchange of discussions and views, and people, they have communicated many good ideas. Perhaps those people would further take up this matter if you and other colleagues agree that you combine point 3 and 4 together, because reconsideration and review, in my view, they are very, very close if they are not identical. They are very similar. I'm not talking about binding and non-binding. That is another issue of the decision of the standing independent. That is another issue with them. But would it be possible you combine 3 and 4 together as one single item? Thank you.
So I'd like to invite other comment on this issue. To me, reconsideration and independent review are quite different in the following way. In the reconsideration decision situation, you're asking the deciding body, the board or the staff, who's made a decision or taken an action to reconsider what they have done and change their mind. In the independent review context, you're asking, you know, a different party, not the decision maker, but an objective party that can apply rules to look at the decision that that the board or the staff has or somebody else has taken and assess whether it's whether it is consistent with the mission statement and the core values. So to me, they feel like different, quite different things. But I would welcome other comments from participants in this conversation on that point. Or Cavus, if you have more to say.
If you allow me, I could say that, yes, I agree with you, but I see reconsideration as a redress, but not as something else. But it should go after the review. You review, once you review and you find something to be look at again, and then you ask reconsideration or redress. This is the way that I'm seeing. I may be wrong, but I think I agree with you. Now, there are two different things, but one should go after the other. First, review, and then reconsideration or redress. Thank you.
Okay, David Post?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that one could think of the system as sort of a two-step process, in a sense. I mean, if an affected party thinks that the board has acted outside of the mission statement or not in conformity with the stated rules and procedures, it could be a process which says, well, first you have to bring that to the attention of the decision maker through a reconsideration type process and allow it, the decision maker, that is, to consider your arguments and to reconsider what it has done, and that's the sort of a neater way to solve the problem if there is indeed a problem. If they decline to do that, or they disagree with your reasoning, or they refuse to reconsider, then you can go to get this third party to come in and evaluate it.
Right, so you could put it either way. Now, to Cavus's point, it surely will be that an independent review could say to the board, what you've done is not consistent with the bylaws or whatever, now go back and reconsider it again. So there's potentially come into play in different ways. Okay, other comments, Greg?
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. It seems to make sense to me, and maybe I'm missing something, but to look at how this currently takes place under the ICANN bylaws. The request for reconsideration is a request that's made essentially back to the board itself, although it's given to the board governance committee rather than the board as a whole. So there's no third party involved. It's a relatively lightweight process, and the board basically, you know, gives its own reconsideration request. The independent review, you know, as its name suggests, is a more heavyweight type of process involving an outside arbitration authority that is going to take on the matter, which, you know, is both more time-consuming, more resource-consuming. So I really see these as rather different types of recourse mechanisms. I don't see how we would collapse them together. And I think, you know, parties that have gone through the independent review have found it to be maybe too heavyweight, and it may need some solutions, but it may be that it's necessary, especially if we're going to go into the binding area, that it remain a robust and unfortunately, therefore, resource, time, and money-consuming process, but the board, the request back to the board to reconsider its own decision, you know, if, you know, backed up with, you know, proper reasoning, it doesn't require anything other than, you know, basically a letter to the board and not entering into a whole arbitration process. So, yep. So again, these seem to me to be two quite different tracks, and clearly it seems to me that the reconsideration process is probably the first step on the road. You could go to the independent review afterwards, but I don't think you'd necessarily need to be required to do so. Thanks.
Okay, anybody else? David, is your hand still up, or is it a new hand?
No, I must be still up. I apologize.
No problem. Okay, then the final thing that we talked about on Friday was a bunch of proposals for new mechanisms, some bylaws changes, a permanent cross-community working group, a recall mechanism, and a community veto. And as I mentioned, Jordan and I had the opportunity to spend some time reconciling our lists, and we decided it made sense for those things to be part of the work party one. Now, obviously, anybody who is dying to work on these new mechanisms would be most welcome to work on them in work party one as well. So this does not preclude your ability to work on those issues. If I could, I mean, although you will certainly have an opportunity to do this, this won't be the final opportunity. If I could ask for people who are interested in these different work streams to raise their hand to indicate they're interested in working on this, then we will be able to sort of set up the real work that needs to get done. So to the extent anybody wants to work on the mission statement and commitments to the community, or the compact, as I'm calling it, could you raise your hands? And if you're not in the in the Adobe room, you could just let us know. So this is a call for volunteers for the standards and comments. I see David Post, Alain. David Maher added. Okay. Going down to the Ombudsman program, volunteers to work on that issue. Edward, that's great. Anybody else? Okay. The reconsideration request, Edward, that's good. This, you know, this seems I think this is one of the clear frustrations with that the community has experienced. So I think this is going to be an important piece of work for the group. And then the independent review, got Greg, David Post, David Maher, anybody else? Okay. All right. It's great. We will add you guys to this. We will also circulate this list to the entire group and ask for additional volunteers. But you should be looking for us to get, you know, reaching out to those of you who volunteered to get some work done. Obviously, you know, we really in order to make the transition timing work, we're going to have to work pretty hard for a bit of time here. So I really appreciate all of the volunteers here. We will be circulating times for regular weekly calls of the full group. We'll try to make those very much, you know, sort of quick check-in calls for reports on progress, because I think the substance of the work is going to be done in the various work streams that we've set up here. Are there any comments or questions about the structure? Anything that I've missed? Anything that I've got wrong? Taking silence as assent. I see Greg. Greg?
I'm not sure if this fits into any of the buckets that you just asked for, but...
Yeah, it's anything else.
Okay, well, then it definitely fits into that bucket. The and there may be some confusion in between the CWG and the CCWG in terms of a particular issue, which is independent review or independent appeals from delegation and redelegation decisions, at least those made by the board. CCTLD delegation, redelegation decisions, at least as far as I understand it, don't go through the board, so would not be germane here. But so maybe we're only talking about GTDLD decisions. But
So this is a real issue and one that we need to be clear on. The CWG did ask the CCWG whether we would have independent appeals mechanisms for the purpose of challenging delegations, revocations, route zone changes, and the like. And we responded that we would have independent review mechanisms that might be usable by the affected community, but noted that at least some parts of the community, and in particular the CCNSO community, I can tell you, feels quite strongly that they it is their job to design any independent appeal mechanism. So we might be providing a tool that they can use, but you know, obviously the standards would refer out to RFC 1591 and the standards that the policies that apply to delegation and revocation and transfers of CCTLDs. I can't tell you that I know where the registries are in the G's are on this particular issue, but our task is to come up with an independent review mechanism to create standards for sort of the ordinary, you know, policy and implementation kinds of issues, but keeping in mind that we will almost surely receive input and design from the directly affected parties with respect to those particular issues. And I'm not sure that that's been, that we succeeded in communicating that clearly enough to the CWG, but it was something that came up just today on the CCNSO list.
Yeah, no, it's still very much, I think, an issue in progress. And I think there are some Cs who very much want to deal with it in one of these groups and some that don't want to deal with it in either of these groups.
And okay, well, that sounds like an issue the Cs have to get together on and get their
action. Yes, and as a matter of fact, we, in this, with my CWG hat, I will say that we tasked the Cs with coming up with a position on that, if they can come up with one.
Okay, great. That's helpful to know. Cavus?
Becky, please correct me if I'm mistaken. Standing independent review panel is something that we are working on.
Correct. Absolutely.
Independent appeal mechanism, it is a process that CWG currently engaged for delegation, redelegation, and revocations. Do we also have any element of the independent appeal mechanism in our work or not? If yes, where it is?
No,
is it part of the independent review panel or is it a separate one? Thank you.
It could be part of the independent review. So, in other words, the registry could, and the CCNSO and the G registries could say, we are going to use the independent review panel for our independent appeals process, but the standards on which the independent appeal question would be raised with respect to delegation, revocation, and the like are not within our work, and I gather from Greg that there's some, at least a question about whether the CCNSOs are on the same page. I can tell you that the leadership of the CCNSO has a pretty strong feeling about it. But so, in other words, I think that the specific standards to be applied and the policy against which a delegation or redelegation would be applied is outside of our remit, And that is a matter of policy, either GTLD policy and contracts or RFC 1591 and the GAC principles, et cetera. So that is the policy to be applied is not within our remit. That's my understanding.
If you allow me, I wish to mention that appeal is entirely different from the review. Appeal, that a decision is made with respect to somebody or something, and somebody appeal for that decision to be modified or corrected, whereas the independent review panel is entirely two different things. I see some inconsistency to put independent appeal mechanism as part of the independent review panel.
That's an interesting point, although I think that there have been several uses of the independent review process to appeal a specific decision. So we just have to, I mean, it could be words that we need to be clearer on. Greg, I see your hand up.
That's Greg Chatton with the Record. It's my understanding and have that there really isn't a difference between the independent review, which you know currently exists, and the independent appeals panel that is proposed by the CWG, except that the independent appeals panel was designed to be only related to IANA-related matters and would not have anything to do with any other board decisions. But that, so that in a sense, it could be a subset of the type of matters that the independent review currently takes on. The other potential difference is that it may deal with matters below the board level. It's, for instance, an appeal from an action taken by the IANA and not by the board. But in terms of the ability of an affected party to seek a review or appeal from a decision of the board, they're identical, except for possible narrower subject matter, again, as the CWG is only dealing with IANA matters. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Greg. That makes sense to me. Other comments or questions? Okay. It is exactly the top of the hour here. So I will be quickly circulating a revised chart to reflect the discussions that we've had and the various volunteers. Anyone who just wants to be on one of the work party lists, even if you don't want to volunteer, I'm sure we can figure out a way to make that happen so that you're aware of what's going on. We do have a call with the full account of CCWG tomorrow, so we'll report on our work then. I really appreciate everybody getting on the call. Any last words or comments? And Alice and Barry and Brenda, I hope you guys took careful notes on the volunteers. I'm assuming.
Yes, thank you. We took notes.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you, everybody. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow, and then we'll be talking soon again.